The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
So much for seasonality. The Dow Jones gives back all of last week's cheer. We have frantic yield curve inversion worries and listener questions. All this and much more on episode number 591 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Well, welcome to the second week of December. This is Andrew Horowitz, and I'm the host of the Disciplined Investor Podcast, as well as the co-host of DH Unplugged, where John C. Dvorak and I get together each and every week on Tuesdays and talk about the lighter side of business and investments, finance, news, all things that are kind of important to us. We get serious too. We talk about some of the more important areas that are shaping, making, breaking markets as well. So make sure to tune into that each and every week. DHUnplugged.com. So I thought we'd start out with some of the more positive notes related to this wonderful holiday season. And if you haven't heard about what goes on down here, down in Fort Lauderdale, during this time of year, there's something called the Winterfest Boat Parade. And that event, there's a few different kickoff events, if you will, of this boat parade. And the one that I went to last night was a black tie event. It's the Winterfest Ball at the Seminole Hard Rock Casino here in Fort Lauderdale. They are doing, I got to tell you, they have made, and they're in the process of building right now, a hotel that is in the shape of a guitar. I'm not kidding. Like a gigantic, enormous upright guitar. And the rooms are actually in there. The expansion of this thing is just amazing. Just goes to show you that, once again, casinos are not built on the winners, built on the losers. So we know how that whole model works. But this casino down here, in the middle of pretty much nowhere in Fort Lauderdale, is just astounding, just gorgeous. The architecture and the building process behind this particular hotel that they're building is just amazing. You have to see pictures. You could look it up online. Seminole Hard Rock Casino. But check it out. It's really cool. Well, I spent some time at the ball, this kickoff ball, this black tie event where they bring in whatever the touring group is for the Broadway show that's playing at the Broward Center throughout the year. This was Anastasia this year. And spent some time with Captain Lee from Below Deck. And we're all getting ready for next week's big event, which is the Winterfest Boat Parade. Now, if you haven't seen this, it's really cool. You can check it out on probably past years on YouTube. What happens is that all these boats, and small ones, but also very large ones, are dressed up for the holidays. Lights and fireworks and music. Last year, Ford brought an entire barge filled with Ford cars and trucks in the water, just cruising down the New River and up the Intercoastal. And it's pretty cool. I mean, a really unbelievable event that takes place down here. One of the top spectator events in Florida throughout the year. I think more people watch, come to this, participate in this than any other event during the year. I guess second to the boat show. Even more than football games. So that was kind of a great kickoff. That was a lot of fun. But generally, this is a great time of year, isn't it? It's a lot of holiday parties, and people are generally in good spirits. And what do we have now? What's going on in the backdrop, right? I mean, I was at this event last night. Everybody's coming up to me, and a lot of people saying, you know, what's going on with the markets? You know, this is terrible. I mean, let's not even talk about what's going on in the cryptocurrency space, which has all been but obliterated. Down anywhere, most of the coins down anywhere from, I would say, conservatively 90% to 99% since their high last year. It was only almost a year ago that we hit the highs. Everybody was all excited after Thanksgiving on the cryptocurrency space. Remember that whole incredible run-up that we saw for Bitcoin and Litecoin and Bitcoin Cash and Ethereum? And pick your name that you want to look at. They ran up dramatically. And everybody thought that this is something. This is going to be a great opportunity. Not only that, so many people were talking about this as a hedge against potential volatility in a traditional or classic portfolio. Remember that whole discussion? Yeah, this will be great because it's not correlated. It really has nothing to do with general markets and worries about governments and currencies and all the things that could really derail a normal traditional stock market. Well, you got these cryptocurrencies and you got to invest in these things. Remember this whole pitch that was being laid out there? And we saw all these year-end numbers of, $40,000 and $50,000 targets on Bitcoin. Oh, man. Come on. We knew this was a scam. We knew this deal was not going to play out. Now, where is it going to be in 10 years from now? I have no idea. But that was a classic bubble. And what was really interesting about this bubble that formed was that it was compressed. It was condensed. It was a classic euphoric move on an asset and then an absolute collapse, but in a time span that was so short that you could really see it play out very, very quickly. Versus a lot of times it takes a lot more of an effort to bring up an asset to a point where it's getting into that quote bubble territory and then crash. It takes time. It may take years and years and years. This happened in a way, it was almost in a 3 or 4 time the speed of a normal boom to bust. And there's a lot of lessons to be learned there. There's a lot of things that you can take away from how people reacted, what was going on in terms of the underlying reality of not having any fundamental basis of investing, but yet people getting crazy, just going nuts. There's reports of people selling their homes and putting all their money in various coins and these groups that got together that was almost like a religious experience. Thinking that this was, some kind of a new way of life, which makes no sense. And all the different things and scams that came off of it, and as quickly as everything was created and then how it built up and then crashed. A really interesting lesson. There'll be some great books written on this. But even if not, even if you're just an observer from a distance even of what happened, I think we could all learn a lot about markets and investor sentiment and the potential for boom and bust cycles to play out time and time again. Because if you heard me say this once, you heard me say it 1,000 times, cycles will always be there. The question is, at what depth do we go from the trough to the peak? And how long is that cycle going to play out? For example, we've had an extremely long cycle in the U.S. from the lows that we saw economically, from a GDP standpoint and from a production standpoint, and where we went to without having a drawdown from back in 2008 approximately to where we are now. This has been an elongated cycle of not only economics, but also stock markets. And now what happens is when you get into that, where the extra length of this, and when you get towards the end of it, what you start hearing is people talking about how, recessions are dead. We won't have corrections again. Markets have figured it out. And you get all sorts of excuses and reasons and theories and justifications of why it is that, markets are going to continue higher forever. So you might as well just keep on putting money into it. And then all of a sudden, you realize that, the cycle isn't dead. It's just elongated. And there we have what's going on right now. Where it seems like, earnings look good. That's what everybody talks about. The U.S. economy is still strong. I've heard that 1,000 times. The Fed is moving at a measured pace and hasn't really slowed down the economy at all. And we're hearing guidance from corporations that seem like, it's pretty good. Yet something else is bubbling under the surface. Markets are sniffing out something that's just not right. So what do we have? We have this great time of year where we usually have seasonality that lends itself towards a higher stock market. Coming into the end of the year, you have all sorts of reasons for this and all sorts of really good justifications why, in fact, you should have a year-end rally, like the fact that there is, again, a lot of high spirits and shoppers are out there. Companies are usually giving us off positive reassurances. On top of that, you have the institutional side of things really trying to push things up in order to make sure that the year-end bonuses are in good shape. I mean, there's just a lot of things that go on towards the end of the year that generally are very, very positive for markets. And all of a sudden, here we are with a stock market that's trying its best to break the back of the holiday spirit, ruin everything. And what's going on? And again, listeners have been flooding me with questions about pretty much just that. Like, what's going on? So let's stop and just take a quick recap from a high level on the news and the things that have been pretty much moving the markets over the last few weeks and talk about this, because last week's bloodbath, especially with a shortened week where Wednesday the markets were closed due to observance of the funeral for President Bush, it was pretty ugly. I mean, the Dow Jones Industrial Average was down 4.5%. The S&P was down 4.6%. The NASDAQ was down 4.9%. The Russell was down 5.6%. That's not good, especially after we had that really nice rally the week before on the heels of, or actually not on the heels, on the expectations of some kind of resolution or some kind of good news that would come from the G20 meeting. Financials were the worst performing sector last week, down in a huge amount, 7.6% for the financials. That's with the fact that if you've seen the financials this year, even before last week, they're looking terrible. I mean, just awful. And part of that is due to the yield curve and how we see the spreads changing the dynamic of the profitability for banks. Remember something, the yield curve itself, or the spread that we see between the short term and the long term, is pretty much the story when it comes to the overall profitability of financials. Because if they're lending out money at the long end of the curve, they're taking in money at the short end. And if in fact that short end of the curve, you know, the 3 month, the 1 year, the 2 year starts increasing in rate and the long end of the curve does not, that means their margins are going to be compressed. I think that makes sense. Said another way, if in fact they're lending out at a higher rate than they are having to pay out. In other words, the money they are earning is much greater than the money they have to pay out for interest on bank accounts and short-term savings accounts. Then what does that mean? That means that their margins are higher. The profitability is better. So all this discussion that we heard about for the last couple of years, how, you know, the good news is, the Fed is raising rates and that's going to be fantastic for banks. At first it was. On the thought that, maybe. We'll see rates across the spectrum increase, and that will really help the profitability of banks. But all of a sudden, we're starting to see an inversion happen here, where last week and the week before, we were getting perilously close, but we saw that the 2s and the 5s, the 2-year and the 5-year treasury, the 3 and the 5-year, the 2 and the 7, the 3 and the 7 inverted. Now, what does that mean? because you've been hearing a lot about this. An inverted yield curve essentially means that the shorter end of the curve or the shorter of the bond when you compare two is higher in yield than the longer. So what's happening right now is the two-year treasury is yielding more than the five-year treasury. That's not normal. What you usually see is a progression of yields that move higher the longer you go out in maturity, because the longer you go out in maturity, the more risk you're taking. What's happening now is that we're seeing an inversion, and that has in the past, and I tweeted this last week, I believe, in the past when we've seen that, it's a precursor to the potential for a recession. Now, is it just magical that this happens and all of a sudden, whoop, there's a recession on the horizon? Does the recession worries cause this to happen? Does this cause the recession? Well, there's a couple of different things happening here. First of all, the main one that we look at when we talk about the fact that there is a look forward and look ahead for the potential for recession is usually the 10 and the 2. So we look at the 2 10s. The 2 10s right now are the narrowest. The spread is the narrowest that we've seen since 2007. Now, don't get yourselves all crazy with the fact that it was 2007, but let's start and talk about what happened. The twos and the tens, what happens if, in fact, you see that there is this inversion happening on the shorters, like the 2.5s and 3.5s, and then the 2.10s, is that banks are much more reluctant to lend out money because they're not making as much money on it. That makes sense. If the banks know that their profitability is going to be, it could be a squeeze, why would they lend out money? Without that lending and possibly increasing lending requirements, there's less money sloshing around to do things. And now that we've seen that existing home sales have slowed down, probably because the cost factors of buying a home are much greater due to the fact that, well, simple. It costs more because yields are higher. So what's happening here is that the biggest concern that we are seeing last week is that there was a lot of buying of the shorter maturities because on the 18th, 19th of this month, there's another Fed meeting that the expectation right now is about 80% that we'll see a 25 basis point increase in the rate. And if that happens with the curve of the 2 10s at about 12 basis points, you see a 25 basis point jump of the short end. It is very likely that we will see the 2 10s invert. And if nothing else, that has been all over the news, the potential for this 2 10 and the ramifications 6 to 12 months out or so on the economy once those 2 10s invert. Now, you have to realize something, right? We're not the only ones reading this. You're not the only one seeing this on the news. Everybody is. Not only that, the Fed is pretty aware of this. And this is why last week, several Fed officials came out in, I would say, a much more dovish stance. Some of them even walking back their previous guidance and commentary. And I got to tell you, I don't think it helped. As a matter of fact, I think it almost hurt. Especially on Friday, when we saw that St. Louis Fed President James Bullard came out and he suggested that the December rate hike possibly would be delayed. Now, I think that was a really big mistake. He's usually dovish. Okay, fine. But you know what? When you get into a situation that the Fed all of a sudden looks really spooked, all of a sudden they go from this rate hike process to saying, well, we're going to be data dependent, and then talking about how we're very close to the neutral rate and then starting to really get dovish very quickly. No wonder markets are getting spooked. No wonder we're seeing that the yield curve is getting wonky. Because you got to wonder, whoa, whoa, whoa. Is the Fed seeing something that we're not seeing? That's what investors and markets perceive. They think about why is the Fed turning around from this discussion of, wow, things are really strong, the economy is on par, unemployment is at really good record level lows, and in very strong, and employment looks to continue, inflation is in check, blah, 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 blah. They talk about all this, right? And all of a sudden, within a 30-day period, they're coming out with a commentary that seems to dispute all that. Like, there's a cliff hanging out somewhere that we're all about to march over. And when it happens as quickly as the Fed is doing it, it backfires on them. Usually what you'd find is dovish talk by voting members and general members of the Fed is somewhat beneficial to markets. But on Friday, when this news hit, there was a very short pop, very small pop, and then rolled right over. Again, I think it was a really big mistake that now they've gone over the top. They've kind of jumped the shark, if you will, with their loose talk, backtracking on what they had been discussing for the last 2 years. So markets are thinking, again, something is lurking under the surface, possibly. Maybe it has to do with the conditions in Europe. Maybe it has to do with conditions of the banks here that have seen such a dramatic sell-off. Maybe it has to do with the combination of their concerns about growth that is going to decelerate dramatically due to the fact that we've had these combination of rate hikes that have been in and the tariffs that are really taking a chunk out of the potential for profitability. And it's not normal for markets to really sell on dovish commentary. And that is a heads up that markets have totally changed their dynamic from, if you remember, the trend in market sentiment for the longest time was buy the dip. And this has all changed to sell the rip, even with really good seasonality at our backs, even with some of the comments. So what caused so much of the angst this week, aside from some of the things that we know about? What was really the bomb that dropped, if you will, that really had markets on edge? That's the question that I asked. And I really started thinking about what is going on with regard to this reaction of markets to what is essentially seems to be, historically would have been, good news. Because if you think about it, we had some good news last week. You had dovish Fed. Supposedly, initially during the start of the week, we had some kind of a slowdown in the escalation of the trade dispute with China. But here's where the rubber meets the road, so to speak. Here's where things got a little out of hand. And I think it was because on Saturday night, when President Trump came out all excited that there was some major breakthroughs and a fantastic meeting and everybody loves him at the China-U.S. summit dinner that they had at the G20 and how, wow, we have this 90-day period that we're going to have like a cooling off period, right? No trade escalations over 90 days, or at least we are going to postpone the increase of the tariffs that we had planned to put on January 1st. From 10 to 25%. We're going to let it go for 90 days. We're going to hold it off. We're going to get involved in this, and I think there's going to be some great things that happen. He said, you know, they're immediately going to start buying all sorts of agricultural products, and they're really going to start stepping up. They're going to drop their tariffs on automobiles and all this stuff that was talked about on Saturday. Sunday night, futures opened up 500 points higher on the Dow. So you had like a 2% bump between the Dow, the S&P, you know, the NASDAQ, all the major markets futures were up big time. Monday morning, we opened up pretty high and then it started to kind of slowly give up some of those gains throughout the morning. Why? And I got to tell you, here's the problem. When we have either whatever you want to call it, stretching the truth, exaggeration, lying, about a very important matter by the president, because none of the information that he talked about really could be confirmed, not only by his own staff and the people that were actually at that meeting. There was nothing on paper. China took 4 days to even acknowledge anything about the meeting. And during that entire time, there were still rumblings and tweets going on about how if China doesn't do this, we're going to do that. The threats, the negativity, the seemingly confusion, massive confusion about what was going on. They couldn't even figure out initially when was the 90 days as of. What was the start date? Some thought it would be January 1st because that was when we were going to be increasing the tariffs on about $200 plus billion worth of goods that are imported from China from 10 to 25%. That was the day it was going to start. So it made sense that, okay, well, it's going to be postponed as of then. Now they're talking about it's postponed as of December 1st. Therefore, you got December, January, and February encompasses the 90 days. The 90 days was from the start of the G20 meeting, essentially. So we have now all of a sudden this black cloud hanging over for the next 90 days. So what did that do? Created even more confusion. And markets don't like confusion. They don't like not understanding what's happening. And what we had here was classic inability for markets to really discern what the facts were. And then realizing after the initial pop that, wait a second, hold on. What you're telling me is that the president of the United States said all these things that we cannot confirm. And in fact, look like even just afterwards during the week, some of these things were factually untrue. Things that we were really basing our buying on, putting our hard money to work on. And market said, forget this. Screw this. I'm not doing this. So we have a real problematic time now that you have not just, you know, oh, we're looking to do some further tax reform. And that kind of lays out there and people can chew on that and figure, well, maybe that was something that will happen. Not caring whether or not there's really any factual substance to that comment, because it could happen, it may not happen, to a situation where the president said something and now markets don't believe it. And you have to wonder what impact that has on market psychology moving forward with regard to what is going to be said by the president and how he's going to react. Because some of the things that happened, for example, the arrest of the Huawei CFO in Canada, requested by the U.S. Huawei, if you don't know it, is one of the largest technology companies in the world, one of the biggest suppliers of electronic parts and smartphones. Think of it like, in a way, like an Apple. And think of what happened with the arrest of the CFO, kind of like, in an offbeat way, Tim Cook being arrested by China. I don't think we would take that very well over here. And as we have this 90-day cooling off period and postponement of any escalation, that was escalation, especially because that was ordered right at the time of the G20. And supposedly, no one else knew about it. None of the politicians knew about it. Nope, we don't know about it. We don't know. Of course they knew about it. And now, no, there's no way that CEOs from the United States, from tech companies, can be traveling to China in any time in the near future or getting involved. There's really bad blood that is being developed here. And then we had Navarro on and we had Lighthizer on, all talking about, hey, just a reminder. This was on like Thursday. Just a reminder. If China doesn't comply and do all the things we want them to do, we're bumping it up to 25% after that 90-day period. I mean, hello, already the combination of rate hikes and these tariffs, which I've talked about ad nauseum, are really starting to hurt companies, investor sentiment, profitability. This combination of higher rates and tariffs are clearly slowing down the U.S. economy and corporate profitability. And we know that the desire of increased rates is to slow down the economy, to stave off rampant inflation, which we don't have, but to slow that down, to make sure that we don't overheat in a way that causes a massive escalation of inflation and other negative items that would happen and bubbles, et cetera. But this tariff thing was not taken into consideration of how much it's really going to hurt, because you know what? No one knew how long this was going to go on. The initial thought that this was just a bargaining chip, that, you know, it's going to be a couple of months, that's it. Nope, that's not how it is. You're messing with the Chinese. You're messing with a communist country that doesn't care about the politics involved. And I've said that China is going to, they'll pretty much allow the house to be burnt down for a good amount of time to make sure that our house is burnt down in the process, to hurt us just as much as we're hurting them. And they have a lot of things they could do. We are definitely bigger, more powerful in terms of economics, or no question about that. And we could inflict a lot of harm on them, but not without some blood from ourselves as well, which we are seeing. That extraction of blood from them is extracting blood from us as well. And that is very clear what's going on. In fact, a recent study showed that the tariffs paid by U.S. companies, and anybody that thinks that the tariffs are not paid by you and me and U.S. companies, you need to screw your hat on a little bit better. The idea that magically these tariffs are coming out of China, they're not coming out of China. Yeah, they're paying tariffs, but U.S.-based companies that are importing the goods from China are having to pay a lot more money in tariffs. It's the U.S. companies that are being hit here. I don't know who else is thinking what they're thinking here, but tariffs are a tax that is paid by companies in the U.S. when you assess them, because what you're trying to do is cause those companies to buy from other areas domestically. But if they continue paying that, they're going to pay a much higher cost. The tariffs that have been paid by U.S. companies over the last year have increased by 100% from exactly a year ago. Now they're paying over $7 billion in the last report. I think it was October. And that should be increasing the longer these tariffs are in play. It's a direct hit to profitability. I've talked about this way back when I first heard about these, and I was really concerned about it. I had arguments with several people. They're like, nah, don't worry about it. It's just a little, you know, it's just the deal. It's just the deal process. No. If you get into a deal and you really don't know your opponent, you could really do some damage to yourself. And that's what's happening now. Into 2019, as I talked about 100 times, if not once, I am really concerned about the slowdown of the U.S. economy due to the tariffs and the combination of the higher rates that we've been seeing. Both are really a problem. On their own, one or the other, okay. But the combination that we've been increasing rates for years now, a couple of 3 years, and these tariffs are really negative to the U.S. economy. So these implications of this, the currency of the current yield curve, no wonder that the markets are concerned and worried. It actually makes sense if you really back off for a second and just stop and take a look back, which, by the way, I want to mention, this is a great time of year for that. It's a great time of year for reflection, right? We do this in our personal lives. We think about, oh, next year I'm going to go on a diet in January. I'm going to, you know, go back and get an education in this. I'm going to, you know, stop and really work on the garden a little bit more. I'm going to treat my kids better. I don't know, whatever you come up with what you want to do and the things that you want to think about. And we make these resolutions and all that. It's also a great time of year to stop for a moment, to stop and take a breath. Look at your investments, look at your portfolio, look at your process, look at what you've done, look at your thinking, and reflect on what went right, what went wrong, and come up with some resolutions for your financial well-being. If you don't use stops on certain positions, if you just let things run and run off into the negative, maybe that's something you need to think about. If, in fact, you have a stock that you buy and you keep buying it, even goes down and down and down, and maybe that wasn't the best thing to do, look at why you've done that and maybe look at adjusting your process. Are you well diversified as a core? In other words, I don't mind anybody having trading accounts, which I think you should have to diversify some of the risk. But is the core of your investments a well-diversified, well-thought-out investment structure that has the, if you will, the base, the foundation of your overall, you know, investment process? Is it solid? And if it's not, if you're doing the trading first and then thinking about building the foundation next, that house doesn't stand for very long. So take some time, look at what you've done, reflect. You don't necessarily have to make some resolutions, but one of the things that I do recommend very highly is just get a clean piece of paper. If you want to use your phone, fine, but I'm a little old fashioned here. I think something about the writing it with a pen down on a piece of paper, the things that you could think of when you reflect back of what you've done the last year or so, how you've reacted, and think about, you know, trying to look at, well, did I react well to this piece of news or that discussion? Or did I take a tip off the TV that I shouldn't have? Or, you know, anything that you've done throughout the year, and reflect on it and see if you could do better next year. Spend some time writing down what you could have done differently to make a better outcome. Smart time of year to do that. Let's get to some listener questions. As I mentioned over the last few weeks, listeners can send me questions on anything you want. Go over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Click on the Ask Andrew link. And from now through the end of the year, we will pick one lucky listener that sends in a question at random. And we will send them a copy of my book, The Disciplined Investor, Essential Strategies for Success. I'll send you the paperback. You can also, by the way, get this on Amazon, Audible. If you want to listen to the audio version, if you are a fan of Audible books, you can do so. Get The Disciplined Investor over on Amazon. So let's get to some listener questions. And the first question comes from Jim Kelly. He's got a couple of comments, some nice things to say here. And he says he's a longtime listener. He says his question is that, should the tariffs continue, what do you see as the long-term effects on stocks, especially large cap companies with lots of international activities? He says, by the way, the costs rising in China as well. Many of the U.S. distributors are moving to other low-cost countries. No mention of those tariffs in those countries. Keep up the great work and financial education. So, Jim, here's the deal. As I mentioned a minute ago, yeah, I mean, what's going to happen is companies will find and will always do this. They will find the lowest cost solution. We've done this for years. The reason, by the way, the reason why we're having such trouble is we have offshored just an incredible amount of manufacturing. So much so that we've done this to ourselves. Now, you could say that what the current administration is doing is trying to fix that. They're trying to return us to a country that manufactures and that we source from ourselves. The problem is that, as you're mentioning, that companies are going to try their best to find the lowest cost solution to get the job done. Why? Well, because they need to maintain profitability. And the stock market has become the stock market and the price of a stock has become the tail wagging the dog. If you lose profitability somehow, what's going to happen is the stock will tank, and investors don't want that. So you have to really be beholden to your investors in that you want to find the cheapest solution to keep your margins up, to keep your profitability high. So I agree that you have these tariffs that are going on. It may cause problems to China, but what about Vietnam, Cambodia, Laos? You know, name your Asian area that would be possible. India. I mean, just name any area around the world that you may be able to find labor that is much better in terms of a cost effectiveness. And clearly it's going to be helpful. Now, there may be tariffs in those countries eventually, but they don't have as much of a trade. They're not as big of a trade partner at this point that China is. And the other big thing is that the U.S. is really trying to punish China for the intellectual property theft, which is a little bit difficult to calculate. But nonetheless, I think we're going after them because of that in a much bigger way. So good question, though. Brett Kahanek writes in. He says, there was an interesting graph here that he saw about bull and bear markets. He said, I'm a little bearish on the overall market for 2019. But if I look at the chart, I find it curious that any bull markets that lasted longer than 6.5 years then lasted about 12.5 years. History seldom repeats, but often rhymes. Consider, should we expect a few additional years of the bull market run? Maybe those trade talks and the Fed relaxing happen and give the Fed opportunity to slow down and bull market a few more years to go. And especially if I was looking at Trump with for a political win in 2019, leading into 2020 as well. So yeah, you're mixing a lot of things up here. Not mixing them up, but you're combining a lot of things, I should say. You're not mixing them up, but you're combining things that I think are very important. Yes, I think that there will be at all costs. So the last several years, we've seen politics at any cost. And with that, you don't know what other things they're going to pull out of a hat to try to buy our votes. And yes, it looks like right now President Trump does desire, because he loves this, the spotlight and the power and all the things that go along with this. He wants to run in 2020. Why not? I mean, you know, if I was president, I want to keep that office as well. It seems like a lot of fun. Exhausting, but a lot of fun. The problem is that you have to realize that there's a lot of things going on that are really causing the potential for a slowdown to be pulled forward a bit, because we had not only that great run for years, but then we pulled forward so much of the potential returns in 2017 due to the anticipation of the tax change happening. And we lowered taxes down so much that right now profitability essentially has peaked, something that may have been a natural progression over about, let's say, 2, 3, 4 years has been pulled together and pulled forward into a year and a half, let's call it. So it would seem much greater chance that unless things change, like, for example, magically, poof, all of a sudden all the tariffs are listed, the Fed stops and even goes back a little bit, it would seem that there is a much higher potential for a market and an economic slowdown, as we're seeing here, and which causes which is the market leading the economy? Is the economy leading the market? That's something that's a chicken and the egg situation. But I think that there is a much greater opportunity for a slowdown than there is for an elongation of the bull market moving forward. Our next question comes from Daniel Cornell. He says, hey, Trump, a.k.a. Mr. Tariff, implies that tariffs will make America rich again. And these tariffs receipts for... Are these tariff receipts for the government, or are they paid by the company doing the importing and therefore an added expense to U.S.-based businesses? I think we just answered that. Thanks for your podcast. Just came into Investology as a client and hoping this works out well. So thank you for that, Daniel. I think we talked about this a little bit, and I think it's important to note that, you know, when you look at these tariffs, it is paid by the companies. So don't be fooled by anything that you read and hear about. So let's see here. We've got a couple more that I think we answered these last week. So let's mix these up. Okay, closing my eyes. Seriously, closing my eyes. Mixing these pieces of paper up, these notes. Okay, and we're going to pull out the middle one. Here we go. This is Daniel Cornell. You are the winner of the book. So we will send you a copy of... We'll send you a copy of The Disciplined Investor, Essential Strategies for Success. If you haven't read it, by the way, it's a bit of a primer on, you know, what's fundamental investing? What's technical investing? What chart sequences can you look at that makes sense to possibly look at buying into a stock? What's quantitative investing? Tell me about the economics and what's important and what's not, and how to look at these. So it's a a really how-to guide, if you will. And I think I wrote it with the idea that I wanted to be timeless. So any of the tools that you see in there that maybe you can get these days on the internet or not, it doesn't matter, because you could find these tools somewhere and use the basic tenets of what I talk about here to bring up a list of stocks that meet certain criteria. The ratios and fundamentals and items and economics don't change ever. So you could use this as a bit of a how-to guide of understanding markets and investing and educating yourself on all that. So get your copy, your audiobook, probably the best way to get it if you like podcasts, over on Amazon, audible.com. All right, I think we're going to wrap it up here. Do we have anything else? I'm just looking through my notes. I think we're good. Make sure to listen to DH Unplugged this week. Coming into the end of the year, and we have, of course, the big Close to the Pin Cup coming up, which we'll announce the winner of the last Close to the Pin, as well as the Close to the Pin Cup, which will probably be announced this week, where you can win a trophy and a shirt and all sorts of goodies if you come closest to the guess of what the Dow Jones Industrial Average will close at the end of the year. So there you go. With that, yeah, thanks you for joining me. Check out thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Follow me on Twitter, Andrew Horowitz. I'll see you again next week. Bye-bye.
The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contains forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations, and differences can be expected. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing. We'll